This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Open Mic. I'm your host, Johnny Kane. It is Wednesday, April the 9th. Hope life's been good to you this week, and we have a good show laid out for you where we'll cover some different ground over the next hour here on the show. If it's your first time tuning into the program, you're going to hear some fresh voices, voices of student broadcasters who speak on a variety of topics that are relevant today. You also hear from some voices that you might recognize, perhaps from a Detroit Lions game or longtime listeners of Detroit Sports Talk Radio. In the past, we've covered topics from how name, image, and likeness impact high school athletes, how college athletes can take ownership of NIL to make it work for them. We've discussed the work of the Detroit Sports Commission in attracting major events to our city, like the Final Four, which is coming in 2027. We've heard stories about the career pursuits of some notable professionals who've reached the pinnacles of their crafts, voices like Dan Dickerson of the Detroit Tigers, and also Dan Miller, the voice of the Detroit Lions. Tonight, we'll hear from one athletic trainer who's worked in Major League Baseball about how the recent rule changes in MLB have impacted the risk for injuries, in particular, injuries to pitchers. And we'll get the reasoning behind some of those rule changes and what other changes may soon be coming to the sport. We'll also hear from local coaches who weigh in on their sports villains. You know, I think we as fans sometimes have players we love to root for, and then those players, not so much. And a lot of time, the players you root against, you'd love it if they played for your team, but that's the beauty of sports. An interesting commentary and some opinions on that topic. Danny Rogers is on the show. Danny works as a sideline reporter for the Detroit Lions. Danny also hosts Inside the Pride on Lions TV. She's a University of Michigan grad. So from Ann Arbor to Toledo, now to Detroit, how she got to where she is today, and the glamour, or lack thereof, I should say, that comes with being a sideline reporter. Mike Stone, the man Detroit sports fans know simply as Stoney, he's on the program. He's been covering Detroit sports on radio since the mid-80s. He's seen it all. He's a really good guy. So we're looking forward to catching up with him in just a bit. But I mentioned a commentary on sports villains. And when I hear villain, I think the counterpart to the hero, right? The antagonist, like a heel in pro wrestling. Aiden Novak is an aspiring sports reporter from Lake Orion High School. Aiden, great to have you on the show.
Great to be here, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
You know, you've got a commentary on sports villains, which I think is, it's interesting. Was it easy for you to come up with your list of names?
It took a bit of thinking because there were so many names that I could think of. But overall, I think, it was pretty easy just to think of three.
What was your criteria?
Basically, guys that essentially cheated, if you will, whether that was taking steroids, doing drugs, a buzzer in the jersey, banging trash cans or something like that. It was just anything that kind of tampered the game overall, like any individuals that kind of tainted their reputation.
All right, so you went with Barry Bonds, Jose Altuve, and Fernando Tatis Jr. Here's Aiden Novak's commentary on sports villains.
A sports villain is a player who becomes famous for breaking rules, showing off, or dominating in a way that makes fans love to hate them. Whether they cheat, trash talk, or just win too much, they feed off the boos and always stay in the spotlight. This goes for any sport, but baseball sure has its fair share of players who wore the black hat. One player that sticks out to me and many other people is Barry Bonds, a jaw-dropping hitter with a prickly attitude and a big asterisk due to steroids. He made outfielders look like little leaguers just watching the ball fly over their heads. And even though his home run record is tainted due to using PEDs, I still believe that he's the best hitter a baseball has ever seen. It takes an immense amount of talent to hit a baseball as consistently as he did, and the steroids only help so much. But another player that stands out to me is more recent and, of course, has controversy stemming from the 2017 Houston Astros World Series team. That's none other than Jose Altuve. Altuve has always been a flashy defender with great speed and a flair for the dramatic. And let's just say he always gives the crowd a buzz whenever he hits a home run. Holding that jersey right when he walked across home plate to win the ALCS for the Astros in 2017 just sparked controversy all around the league for Jose Altuve. One last player is even more recent that sticks out to me, and of course, he's a San Diego Padres superstar, Fernando Tatis Jr. Tatis was supposed to be baseball's next superstar, lightning fast, smooth in the field, and capable of jaw-dropping home runs. However, his abuse of steroids a couple years ago that got him suspended was really what tainted his reputation. Now every home run comes with an extra long stare, every stolen base with a little extra flair, and every team just remembers everything that Tatis has ever done.
All right, Aiden, so your commentary isn't limited to your own opinions. Who else's opinions did you get?
So I got my head coach, Andy Schrammick, here at Lake Orion Baseball, my assistant coach, who's our catching coach, Dennis Recknagel, and one of my good friends, one of our pitchers and third baseman, Carson Russell.
And any surprises from them?
There was one. Recknagel actually went way back in time, and he picked up Ty Cobb. And I was very shocked to see that he went way back when the Tigers were really just kind of first starting out. He went way back in the time machine, but that was really the only surprise because the other two went with more modern players.
All right, let's listen.
Yeah, one baseball villain, I'd say it'd be Joe Kelly. Probably just because all his antics he does on the field, y'all, always saying something to the other dugout, all his crazy celebrations. I'd say that makes him considered a villain in the league.
Jason Worth, former Philadelphia Philly, traded to the Washington Nationals because he wanted to spend some extra time with Chase Utley's wife. Well, and that's against the rules when anywhere, but especially in a clubhouse.
Ty Cobb is one that comes to mind. He was beloved by Tiger fans, but despised throughout the whole league because of how he played. He came out with high cleats, wasn't afraid of contact, and people thought he was a dirty player.
There are plenty more controversial superstars in the game of baseball and all throughout sports. For sportscaster.com, I'm Aiden Novak.
Well, everybody's got opinions, that much we know. Aiden Novak from Lake Orion High School, class of 2025, baseball player. What's next for you upon graduation?
So I'm currently committed to Delta College to go play baseball and also major in broadcast journalism after those 2 years. If I get offers to go play at other schools for baseball, I'm going to take them. If not, my plan is probably to go to Michigan State University to continue my degree in broadcast journalism.
Wish you all the success. Appreciate the input on today's show.
Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate it.
You got it, brother. If you're a baseball purist, you love the game for what it is. It is a beautiful sport. And in recent years, we've seen rule changes that have been implemented to help speed up the game. First and foremost, they want to improve scoring, increase action on the field. And there has been some success in doing that. It was 2023 when Major League Baseball adopted the pitch clock. They also had imposed some additional limits on defensive shifts, larger bases. But really, the pitch clock was the biggest one for me. And I want to bring in Ben Frakes. He's a journalism student from Michigan State University. And Ben, you had a chance to talk with Steve Domzalski. And Steve spent several years working at the collegiate level at Wayne State before going on to work in the major leagues with the Marlins. What's your connection with Steve?
Thanks, Johnny. He was my baseball coach in Little League. We've had a relationship for a very long time. And, you know, he's such a great guy. The knowledge that he brings to the game is just really impressive. And I was really happy talking to him about this.
And what'd you find out?
Well, what I found out was he actually has a really different perspective than a lot of us do. You know, we all have opinions about these new rules, some good, some bad, but he looks at it from a different way because he's an athletic trainer and he's talking to these guys all the time about how they're feeling. And some of these new rules have really changed the way that they play the game. And this really can affect their health.
Yeah, I think that's the fascinating part about it for me. Again, getting a medical perspective on it. Again, you try to implement rules to try to make the game more attractive to a larger audience, but with respect to the players involved, how does it impact them on a personal level? So here's Ben Frakes and his sit-down conversation with Steve Domzalski of the Miami Marlins.
So today I'd love to discuss some of the recent rule changes in baseball. It's been such a big topic of discussion recently. There's been so many new rules implemented to the game recently, most significantly in 2023. And I'd say the pitch clock would probably be the most significant. Do you think reducing the length of the game has been a successful move for the sport?
I think that it has been. I think that some of the intricacies of baseball have gotten out of hand. My role in professional baseball is in the medical setting. So it actually is kind of it's a double-edged sword because the way baseball is moving right now, particularly with pitching, I'm an athletic trainer and a physical therapist, and probably 75% of the guys I work with are pitchers. And right now, bigger, faster, stronger has never been more a part of the game than it is now. There's more guys throwing 100 miles an hour than there ever has been in the history of baseball. There's more technology that's helping these guys throw as hard as they can than ever. But there's also more surgeries being performed now than ever, which is kind of funny since medical technology has come so far. So are the rule changes due to that? If you're rushing someone to throw at a faster pace than they usually would, and they have less time to rest in between pitches, and they're throwing the ball harder than they ever have in their life, obviously some fatigue's going to set in sooner. Another rule change in baseball that's been implemented to try to provide more offense is the absence of any sort of tactile substance on the baseball. No more spider tack or pine tar, or, you know, the guys always try to get creative with mixtures of rosin and sunscreen and whatever, just to have a better grip on the ball. And what happens if the pitchers can have a better grip on the ball is they can spin the ball at a faster rate, creating more movement on the ball when they throw it. When they take that away from these guys, the only thing they have to be able to grip the ball tighter is to be able to use the muscles in their arm to squeeze the ball tighter, which results in a lot more stress on their elbow, therefore more injuries. Speeding the game up is always going to be good. I think baseball is fighting against a lot of history, and the age of the average baseball fan continues to go up, and they're doing whatever they can to get young people to like baseball again. It's a unique sport. So I think that, you know, there's good and bad to it. Everything in life is speeding up.
Speaking of the new rules, the automatic ball strike system is getting closer and closer to reaching the Major League Baseball level. I'd love to know if you've gotten any feedback from the players about this, and do you have a general sense if it's going to be used soon?
It's coming. There's no doubt about it. It's coming. I spent last year working in AAA baseball, and the system was 100% in full effect. When I first witnessed it being used in games, I was skeptical. But after a full season of witnessing it, I thought it was good for the game. It didn't really slow things down too much. The nature of the challenge has to be immediate. If a player is going to challenge a ball or a strike, they have literally like 2 or 3 seconds to do it. If they don't, then they've lost their opportunity. And the fact that they have a limited number of challenges, they're going to be pretty guarded about when in the game they use them. And then the technology is pretty quick. So I've found that it does not really hinder the pace of the game. And I think, like any other sport, baseball is really trying hard to implement technology. I think the automated ball strike system is another way to get fans into the game. They kind of get into it. So it's become, it's on its way. I would say in the next couple of years, it'll be in the major leagues.
So you've seen the fans actually enjoy that process, get into it when they're putting it up on the screen?
It's a twofold effect that it had for me was that the fans really got into it. They'll scream for something to be challenged if they think it should be challenged, and then they'll react emotionally to a challenge being right or wrong. It's definitely another layer that's added into the drama of things.
As an athletic trainer, I'm sure, as you've mentioned, you're always looking out for players' health and their safety. And in some college baseball conferences, we've actually seen the safety base at first base be implemented into the game to avoid collisions at first base. I'm wondering if you think it'll ever come to the major league level.
I think that I would be surprised if it came to the major league level. I think that they're very slow to make major changes in baseball. The college level, they can get away with it more. I don't think it's really become a big enough issue in pro baseball to be something that is totally necessary to be implemented.
You're listening to Michigan State student Ben Frakes speaking with Steve Domzalski, who works in Major League Baseball. Again, one of the things that was covered there, which I thought was interesting, and we'll see how it all plays out, is the ABS challenge system. It's automated balls and strikes. Obviously, we saw it rolled out in spurts this spring training. And again, the reaction from players, managers, it's an adjustment. And again, for baseball purists, like some of us, the human error has been part of the game. But you do want to get the calls right in big moments. They obviously do have instant replay already in baseball. But ABS, the automated balls and strikes could be coming to the game in the near future. Our next guest is an aspiring sportscaster, Cooper Schoenberg from the University of Indiana. He and Carter Lutz from the University of Miami have a podcast titled Live and Uncut. And they spoke with longtime Detroit media personality Mike Stone. Hey, good to have you on, Cooper. What did you learn from Stoney?
Well, what I've learned all throughout my life listening to Stoney is Detroit sports and the culture that comes with it. But in this interview, getting the opportunity to sit down and talk with them two-on-one, is kind of the art of storytelling. But every single question that we asked Mike Stone, the answers were just so interesting and captivating, where he would tell a story from the 80s and fast forward to 2000s and talking about memorable playoff runs from any of the four major Detroit sports teams. So it was a thrill and an honor being able to sit down and talk to him.
Yeah, he's a walking book of knowledge. Let's listen into your interview with Mike Stone.
Now, waking up at 7:30 on a cold Detroit winter, frosty air hitting your face, stepping into that car and turning on 97.1, the ticket. And who better voice to hear than the very angelic Mike Stoney Stone. Stoney, thank you so much for joining us today.
What's up, boys? Glad you guys are doing well.
Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. My pleasure.
We're going to get into some Detroit ball talk, of course. We got to hear some of your thoughts. But you were really a part of the uprising of Detroit sports media, you and a couple other guys. But for you, what was it like having that process, kind of working through that and receiving the fame almost that you got locally? And how did that go down?
Well, it's interesting because I went to college at American University. We actually made the tournament this year. I worked as an intern at the NBC television station, worked there behind the scenes, producing sports and network feeds. It was so different back in the early 80s. Most of the stations didn't have satellite dishes. We provided highlights and things like that. And there was a show, you're obviously way too young, your parents might remember, called the George Michael Sports Machine, which was like a precursor to ESPN. So I was on the ground floor of that, wanted to get on the air, didn't work. It wasn't happening. And I did something very stupid. I quit before I had another job. So I was, in the meantime, looking around. I was working at a greeter in a bar in downtown DC, which is a great bar town. And exactly, God, it was about 36 years ago yesterday. I tried to tell somebody they couldn't, you know, bring a beer out into the street, and her boyfriend sucker punched me from behind. And I said, you know what? Time to get a real job. And Bernie Smilovitz worked at a different TV station in Washington. He had just got offered a job in Detroit. He wanted somebody with NBC ties to help produce. So we drove out. He was already here in March. I started in May of 86. And then I became friends with Mitch Albom. We lived together for a while. And he did besides his newspaper stuff, he would do like sportscasts on 98.7, The Wheels. It was rock and roll back then. And then we did this Sunday night show called the Sunday Sports Album, which was a two-hour talk show every Sunday night. And then finally, Detroit was the last big city to really get all sports radio format. WDFN started in July of 94, and I got lucky and got the afternoon job with Rob Parker. We had a real good thing going. He left, wanted to go back to New York and do more of his writing. And Wojo took over for him because we did a weekend show, and Stoney and Wojo's show became really, really popular and was a lot of fun. And then in 2009, when Obama was being inaugurated, Clear Channel, which is now iHeart, decided it'd be fun to fire 3,000 people nationwide on that day. So we got let go. And then next thing you know, I'm at 97.1 filling in. And then Jay Towers leaves their morning show, and I go in with Bill McAllister, and then that didn't go great because they let go of Bill. And then Jamie came in, and that was great because I knew Jamie from DFN. And then, as you know, unfortunately, he passed away at the age of 48. And then Jansen took over. And so that's basically me in a nutshell.
We got the full rundown, I think, right there.
Yeah.
No, it definitely builds character. And talking about building character, you know, for all the aspiring sports broadcasters out there listening to this interview, through all your experiences at American University to the George Michael Sports Machine on WRC TV, How did those past, you know, previous experiences help shape you as a radio personality?
Yeah, it's so weird because it was so different. Even before, you know, college and things, I always wanted to be a play-by-play guy, really. That's what I wanted to do. I used to sit with, you know, little cassette decks in my house when I was like 10 years old doing games, Super Bowl games and things like that. I, you know, was the PA announcer at our high school. I did play-by-play for the college radio station when I was an American. And it just went, one thing went to another. And I never really thought of doing a talk show for a vocation. We did it in college. You know, we had a college radio station you can only hear in the dorms. So we'd be on for 2 hours, me and somebody, and we'd get like one phone call for 2 hours. So that's where you learn how to, the gift of gab, where you have to bullshit for a long time. And then, so that has helped.
No, I think that's exactly what everybody needs to hear. I know me at Indiana University and Carter at the University of Miami calling games on WIUX or WVUM. It definitely is a character builder, starting at the bottom, you know, learning sports like volleyball, working your way up to football or basketball. But that's the bread and butter of it all.
Yeah, even when I was in D.C., I would do play-by-play of high school games. I tried to do a little of everything you could. And then when the radio thing started, to me, it was just natural because I was a Rain Man, savant, whatever. My head has more useless information than I know what to do with. And so it helped in talk radio.
Yeah. And hearing about you and that experience in college, that's literally what I did this year, started our own talk radio show. And it's important for people out there to hear you taking that initiative, being aggressive, not being afraid of, you know, doing something like that for sure. I know for Cooper and I, you mentioned it, but listening to you growing up, you and Jamie specifically, that was kind of our prime of on the way to middle school, on the way to high school, and a lot of great interviews.
Thank you.
Breaking things down with people, learning so much we didn't, you know before. And it was a couple of tough years of Detroit sports.
Yeah, I feel bad for the generation of Detroit sports fans. And thankfully, every team, while the Wings, I still don't think will make the playoffs, at least every team's good to a certain extent.
It's the first time ever, and they're all trending upwards. So we're excited yes. about that. But for you, as I said, a very talented interviewer, Cooper and I have had the pleasure of doing, you know, 3 to 4 of these interviews now. What has made you so good at it? Maybe you can talk about the prep, but what's really your approach with these interviews?
I think what you have to do with the interviews, and sometimes I do it well, sometimes I don't, is it has to be more conversational. And you can't be afraid to ask the tough question. I mean, we used to go, because he was such a weird guy, that Jim Harbaugh wouldn't do the weekly thing over the phone. We would drive to Ann Arbor every Monday and talk to him. And it ended up being better because it's person to person.
Well, coincidentally, kind of a fan question here, but the first time that Carter and I met you was outside of the post-game press conference following the Michigan State-Oakland men's basketball game this year, where we got to do a little dual interview with Campy and Izzo.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So kind of to ask you, do you have a little favorite interview you've ever done or some of the top people that you've interviewed repeated times?
All right. My favorite, and I wish could actually do it again, but for some reason, throughout every station, couldn't be able to do it. Years ago on DFN, so former Red Wing Aaron Ward and I, and a producer, we were invited to go to that charity golf thing they have in Colorado every year, the pros from other sports, they all play golf. So we had a setup right on the practice range, and they bring us, you know, players, you know, good guys. And so they brought us Charles Barkley. And me being from Philly, I love Barkley. I just think Barkley's the greatest. So we had Barkley on, and then Lambeer was just finishing. So we had the two of them together, and it was, you know, they didn't hate each other. It was really, really good. So that is my favorite, is Charles Barkley.
I mean, obviously, two guys that love to butt heads in the league. I mean, we're diehard Detroit Pistons fans, so we know all about the Bad Boys and Bill Lambeer.
Yes, indeed.
For sure. You've given out some spicy takes. No doubt about that. I'm sure you know. So have we in our short time as podcast hosts. But for you, what's the take that you got the most heat for? Maybe it was in the moment that worked out well and was better for you long term, or maybe it's something that aged poorly. But what's that take that comes to mind instantly?
There's a few. There was one where I said Brett Favre would never make the playoffs again, and then he obviously did. and I think won a Super Bowl. There was one where the Pistons, I think it was in 06, they beat Miami. And I said, the Miami Heat are done. They're dead or whatever. And they won the championship. There's actually one that, I mean, I got a lot of heat from the other day that I think people took it too seriously or too literal. I said that despite the fact that Michigan beat Wisconsin, I still think Wisconsin's a better team. And God, the stuff I got on Twitter was ridiculous. You've never seen a basketball game. They beat them twice in analytics. I said, yeah, I know the analytics. That's just my eye test. I just, you know, thought they were a better team.
Kind of, I agree with that take. I mean, Wisconsin, you know, they're a 3 seed. Michigan's a 5 seed.
Yeah, which is, I think Michigan got screwed. It should have been a 4. They should have been a 4.
I don't know how Purdue losing to Michigan twice gets ahead of them, but
I know. And there was another one where I, like in 2014, I think, I didn't think the Tigers had a chance to make the playoffs. And I said, if they do, you can shave my chest. And they did. And then there was a famous one on Channel 7. It was when Rich Rod was coaching Michigan. I said, there's no way they're losing to Purdue. If they do, I'll, you know, come in dressed as a woman. And they lost. So I've had a few of those.
Final question, and yes, obviously you as an interviewer have asked a lot of tough questions, but me, Cooper Schoenberg, I'm about to ask you the hardest question you've ever received. Can we get your top three Bruce Springsteen songs of all time?
Rosalita is number one. That's from the second album. Number two is For You, which is from the first album. I'm going to go just for this off the beaten track, Murder Incorporated.
You had those locked and loaded and ready.
Well,
to go.
the first two are staples for me. Most people, they like Thunder Road, which I love as well. There's so many great songs. It's kind of a sick obsession, but you know, as my wife says, some husbands gamble too much, some drink too much. You go see Springsteen 138 times in your life.
Well, you know what? Call Bruce Springsteen the greatest of all time. I know we call you the greatest radio talk voice
of
all time. All right. So thank you.
Now you're gonna make me well up.
You've been a part of our lives growing up, you know, helping us learn not only pop culture, but of course sports in Detroit, teaching us the importance of how much sports can do for a city. So thank you so much for all of that and for taking time out of your day today to talk with us.
My pleasure.
That was Mike Stone with Sportscaster.com's Cooper Schoenberg and Carter Lutz. If you want to hear more, check out the website Sportscaster.com, or you can search Sportscaster.com on social media platforms. The sports scene in Detroit is on the rise. Playoff runs from the Lions and Tigers last season. Pistons are in the playoffs starting next week, and mathematically, the Red Wings are still clinging to hope. Incredible time to be a sports fan here in Detroit. You know, going back to the Lions last year, they made it to the divisional round. And our next guest hopes to one day work in the NFL. She is Lyric Sloan from Michigan State. And she spoke to someone who's living that life, being Danny Rogers of the Detroit Lions. Lyric, great to have you on.
It's great to be here.
How cool was it for you to be able to talk to somebody like Danny?
Oh my gosh. She's in the position that ultimately I would want to be in. And it was so cool because not only did I meet someone and get great advice, but I also met a friend out of it. I mean, she's such a good mentor to have.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. People ask, what is networking? And really, at the end of the day, it's just relating to other people. You just never know when that day comes as you make that phone call or send that text and could change your life. So is sideline reporting glamorous?
I feel like women make it even more glamorous, but she told me that her days are so long. A college football game day, kickoff is at noon. She's waking up at 6 a.m. to get ready. That's a 15-hour day. She heads to the airport after that to meet the Lions where they need to be. So she said it was so fun and it's so rewarding, but it is not that glamorous. She said it's so worth it, though.
Yeah, it really is. I know I'm less glamorous on the sidelines, personally speaking, but you wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, it's the greatest job in the world. This is Lyric Sloan and her conversation with Detroit Lions sideline reporter Danny Rogers.
Everyone has an initial inspiration for why they chose this career path. Do you have a singular piece that this is why you wanted to do this?
I always go back to high school and everyone asks me this, and I say I do not know the exact moment where I was like, I want to be a sports broadcaster. I will say I grew up watching Detroit Lions every Sunday with my dad. So that totally influenced me. The major part of the story was I tore my ACL in high school after playing sports my whole life. And I thought, I don't want to give sports up. Let's try another avenue. And yeah. So I don't know how or why, but sports broadcasting then became like the forefront of all of my dreams. And so we've just been following them ever since.
Did you start in college or did you start pursuing it?
In college. We didn't have these resources. I was in high school in 2011. iPads were just becoming a thing in schools. It just wasn't a thing. And I didn't think to like put effort and energy into that as a high schooler.
Right.
I was playing sports. I was like doing everything. I was working on getting into Michigan. So that just wasn't my main priority. I don't think I got on camera in college until probably second semester at Michigan.
So I feel like everyone says in this industry, it's so competitive and it's really rigorous. Do you think that you had like a lucky break where you knew that you were making it on your way?
I think I'm the luckiest human in the entire universe. That's why I have a horseshoe tattooed on my finger. But I'm just such a believer in if you do the work, like the doors open for you. Sometimes it's lucky timing. If I had graduated maybe 6 months later with my original class in 2018 with Michigan, I probably wouldn't have gotten the job that I had in Toledo right out of college that just platformed me to the next thing. If I maybe was a year younger or a year older, maybe I wouldn't have been ready for the Detroit Lions job, or maybe I thought I had surpassed that position. I think there's a lot of luck in terms of timing, but I have manifested and worked hard for every single thing. So I don't want to chalk it all up to luck.
Definitely with this industry, you have to do the work. Like if you're sitting on the couch and you're seeing someone on the field when you had that opportunity, like that's where you're missing it.
I agree.
So you've covered so many sports. While I was doing research on you, there was even car racing.
Oh yeah.
In there.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite sport that you like to cover?
Well, when I was in local sports, local TV in Toledo, Ohio, you did cover everything. And I never wanted to pigeonhole myself into one sport. But football kept sucking me back in. That was the majority of my internships in college. That's where I knew everyone, where I had built up a lot of relationships and connections in this industry. So I don't do as I do as I say, like try not to pigeonhole yourself. But yeah. I have pigeonholed myself into a $1 billion sport. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So football is my favorite, yes.
So that brings me to my question. You're a college student finding out that you're getting an internship with the Rams. It was in the summer, right?
Yes.
What was your initial reaction to this? How did this come about?
Well, it's very interesting. I will die on the hill that it's all about who you know in this industry. So that football coach, Jed Fish, I nannied his girls. They were like 3 and 5 at the time. And I did that because I needed money for an econ tutor at Michigan and I couldn't get the same tutors that the student athletes had. So he's like, come babysit my girls and I'll pay you. You can pay the econ tutor. I'm like, great. So I became best friends with his wife. I was there 2 to 3 times a week. So I told him, I'm like, hey, coach, I need an internship. He's like, okay, let me call someone. So he ends up calling Les Snead, the GM. And was like, hey, I have someone who needs an internship. So next thing you know, I'm getting an email from the social team with the LA Rams. I went through one interview and got it. Essentially, he was like, hey, Snead, I'm going to need you to do me a solid here.
Yeah, this is your girl.
So yeah, so a lot of people are like, how'd you get these internships? You know, where'd you apply? I thankfully didn't have to apply. And that's because I went into the Michigan football office 7 a.m. every day, worked my booty off. When I needed an internship, it was right there. And I went there and crushed it. And it was one of the best experiences ever. So my biggest thing is always ask for help.
I totally agree. And also like them seeing you put in the hours, building relationships is so important.
It is, yeah.
So sideline reporting for women seems very glamorous, but when you're coming beforehand and not even in being in the career, is it as glamorous as it looks like?
No, it's not at all. It's not at all. I apologize for probably making it, you know, look a little bit like that. I know a lot of us do. College football days, I'm probably up at 6 a.m. after sleeping for about 6 hours because we'll fly in Friday, do meetings for 5-6 hours with coaches. I have to reorganize all my notes, write all my storylines. I'm mentally and physically exhausted. I was just on a plane, sitting through all these meetings now. You get up at 6 a.m. for a noon game. I probably don't eat, but I had a coffee. I make sure I have a coffee and try to get a bottle of water in. I go there, have to do 3 pregame hits by 10 a.m., go into full game mode by noon, do a 4-hour game, walked 3 to 4 miles along the sidelines. probably sweating. I don't look like how I looked starting the game. We need to start posting more of the afters. And then I'm racing to the airport to get on a plane to go meet the Lions wherever they are. So that's like a 15-hour day. None of it's glamorous, but it is so fun and it is so rewarding. And I think it's one of the most challenging jobs. It is a beast being real-time in-game. It's an art and it has to be perfected. It's not ever going to be perfect, but no, it's not glamorous, but it is a lot of fun. When it's not fun anymore, I'll stop doing it, but I don't ever see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, you're feeling the energy and it's so cool because there's no story. I mean, every game, it's anyone's game.
For sure. I've gone in with a million stories and used one or two. Sometimes I've used none because players decide to get hurt. And then it just, you throw every piece of note away and you try to bank on what you've heard through all the meetings and all your research prep and just bring that into the broadcast. Yeah.
Danny Rogers works as a sideline reporter for the Detroit Lions. She also hosts Inside the Pride on Lions TV. I just want to remind anyone listening that may know somebody who has dreams of becoming a sports broadcaster, or maybe it's you yourself that have a dream of working in sports. You can go to sportscaster.com. You can create your own profile, upload content to that profile, and then you too could be a guest here on Open Mic. To Lyric Sloan and Danny Rogers, Ben Frakes and Steve Domzalski, Cooper Schoenberg, Carter Lutz, and Mike Stone, Aiden Novak, we appreciate you guys being on the show today. We appreciate you for listening tonight, and we'll see you next week here on Open Mic on WJR.